When you work in education leadership, you don't get off at 5 o'clock. Your mind is always on the clock, thinking of ways to solve problems for your students, parents, and teachers. On the Clock is your go-to podcast to learn valuable insights from education leaders across the United States. I'm your host, Todd Dallas Lamb, former White House appointee to the U.S. Department of Education, and we are now On the Clock. Welcome back to On the Clock. Our topic today is not fun, but I hope it will inspire you to share the messaging that you hear today. It's about protecting our young people by giving them tools to spot the signs of potential relationship abuse, and an organization that helps us understand the problem and arms us with the ability to spot warning signs. I hope you will share this podcast with your social media and friendship networks across the country. Almost exactly 14 years ago today as we tape, a young woman at the University of Virginia, a senior lacrosse player, was tragically murdered by her boyfriend. You may recall the name, Yardley Love, who was taken on May 3rd, 2010, almost 14 years ago today as we tape our episode. To honor her legacy, her mother and sister started the One Love Foundation, an organization that helps young people spot the signs of potential abusive relationships. With us today is Yardley's former UVA coach. She recruited Yardley to play at UVA, and now Julie Meyer is the CEO of that foundation. Julie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Todd.
I want to talk about the foundation and your efforts, but I first thought it might be nice to remind us a little bit about Yardley. The name was national news, and it's been 14 years. Tell me what she was like when you were recruiting her here in the Baltimore area.
So I met Yardley when she was in middle school. I run a really big lacrosse camp in the summer, and almost everybody from Baltimore came to camp at some point in time, and Yardley was no different. I watched her come with a giddy group of girls that came to camp and had a great time. And I also noticed Yardley, no matter where we were, if there was somebody that was alone, she would go and make sure that person wasn't alone. That camper had somebody to throw a ball with, had somebody to eat a meal with, or even walk to and from the fields with. So what I first noticed of Yardley was how big her heart was, how aware she was of people, and that she was in a position that she could make people feel better. As I watched her play through high school, she was always a really good player. She wasn't the best player, but she added so much to a team because she could play any position, and she was great to teammates. So, and her dream was to come to Virginia from childhood.
I understand her father was at UVA, but then went into the military and never finished his degree, and that was a dream of hers, wasn't it?
So Yardley, as a player, was versatile. She was a trained midfielder, which meant she could play attack or defense. When she came to college, she remained versatile. One year, she'd be a middie, and next, she'd play defense for us. It really changed season to season, but also game to game, and that never changed. You know, I watched Yardley grow up and get her strength, and I watched her find her direction and find a beautiful group of friends. And I watched her fall in love with a gentleman that was on the men's team. I watched her grow up in this relationship. And then I had thought that it had ended. So as I'm getting ready in Yardley's fourth year, we had a top four team. I'm thinking we're going to get to a Final Four and that we were just trying to put all the final touches on. You know, I was so excited about our possibilities. I didn't realize as I was trying to figure out how to squeeze one more goal or make one more stop, one more draw, she was really trying to stay one step ahead of her ex-boyfriend, George. She was trying to stay safe and trying to see him in public areas and during daylight. She knew something without being able to really put words to it. She knew that her plan was to just graduate from college and to get away from this boyfriend. But as I'm trying to play lacrosse and trying to get her even better and help our team, she's juggling way bigger things. So I watched her grow up. I watched her get stronger. I watched her create opportunities. And then I didn't have her. And then we come home from a game on a Sunday, and by Monday early morning, I get a phone call that there had been an accident. And as a coach, I'm thinking we're getting ready for games, and how is Yardley going to help, and how far are we going to go? And then I didn't have her. So it was such a sudden, profound, gut-wrenching, unimaginable scenario to find ourselves in. But Yardley, as a person, was as beautiful on the inside as she was on the outside. As kind as anyone could ever be, just really, truly the person you would want on your team. And my biggest haunt is that I didn't realize as I'm looking at her as this person that's growing up and maturing and this player that helps our team, I didn't realize what she was going through. So, you know, that's my heartache.
One of the things that makes it so tragic is when doing my research and looking her up, I have a 21-year-old about to graduate. She looks like she could be one of his friends. Like, she just has the world by the tail almost. She was already had a job opportunity after college. What was she going to do?
She actually was undecided. So she had spent the summer in New York, working in New York the summer before. She had a couple of options, but she hadn't even gotten to decision time. So that part was still going to be undecided.
What were the warning signs? Such a big part of the foundation's effort is to identify these warning signs that you mentioned throughout your website. What were some of the warning signs that people identified after the fact that might have been useful before the fact?
Well, I think, you know, it really took losing Yardley and then preparing for a trial and sitting in the trial for really everybody to understand what we did miss. You know, when Yardley was killed, you know, very quickly, it was George was drunk. You know, very quickly, this horrible behavior had an excuse. And what we realized is that a lot of his behaviors leading up to the ultimate night, that always had an excuse. So it was, you know, a bad day, a bad game, a hard test, too much to drink and whatnot. So we missed a lot of things we didn't understand until we sat in that trial. What we didn't realize was a lot of the behaviors that Yardley was dealing with, that was experiencing, you know, they really did take the life out of her. You know, it was, he was very manipulative and controlling. You know, there he was very much, a lot of that relationship really limited Yardley. And so she had broken up with him. You know, I think we thought she broke up and it would be fine. What we didn't realize is that oftentimes after you break up, you're actually in even more danger. He had actually put his hands on her before and actually strangled her. And what we find after the fact is that that's actually a huge indicator of more violence down the road and ultimate, you know, potential death. So we didn't realize that his manipulating and his controlling was really building. This abuse was building towards violence for months and months and months. And we didn't realize it until it was too late, until really the timeline and progression was explained in court. We didn't understand all of what Yardley had experienced. Different groups had seen different things, but not one group saw all of it. What I missed as a coach, I would say, is the opportunity to have a conversation, the knowledge to be able to say, hey, Yards, how are you doing? You know, how's your relationship make you feel? No, I didn't realize that could have also saved a life as well.
Yardley's story was absolute national news for a long time. And I think a lot of what made it national news was that her and her killer had a privileged upbringing. I think it's possible that some people think that relationship abuse is something that might have happened more often in less affluent communities. But that just isn't so. How big of a problem is relationship abuse in America?
Well, and that was, I'm glad you asked, because that was the other thing we learned. We really thought domestic violence was you were married, you had kids, you had financial problems, you had struggles. We didn't realize that domestic violence and relationship abuse, it really lives in that 18 to 24 year old age group. It is so prevalent in that age, in that group, no matter where you're from, no matter what you have and where you live, it doesn't matter that violence is right there. So, I mean, it was eye-opening to understand that was even real. It is amazing to me when now we do some of the research to see how prevalent relationship abuse and domestic violence is in this high school demographic too. So high school and college is a super, super vulnerable spot.
What is the One Love Foundation doing now to empower students? Are you going on college campuses and high schools?
So we do a lot of different things. We have 16 different workshops. And really we have decided, in the beginning, Sharon and Lexi, they were like, well, let's let people know what we didn't know. Let's make sure that we raise awareness of what signs of abuse are. Make sure that people understand that this demographic, this age group, it really does live inside of this. So a lot of our focus early on was trying to help people understand if they were in a dangerous spot or not. we realized very quickly that if that's all we're doing, we're not really helping the problem. We're not really part of the solution. So by going younger, after college, we went into high school and we did a lot of prevention education, awareness of the 10 healthy signs and the 10 unhealthy signs. The signs are really behaviors and really starting conversations around these behaviors and the emotions that they evoke. Once we were in that high school setting, the high school kid said, I really wish I knew this in middle school. So we do really live now in that middle school through high school age with a lot of our workshops. Again, 16 different workshops. We have 7 different learning objectives. We have the ability to create any kind of lesson plan for whatever that class is. If it's a middle school class, if it's a high school class, if it's 40 minutes, if it's 1 hour, we have all kinds of objectives and lesson wizards that will help teachers generate it. But really that prevention education is our huge focus for that middle school and that high school group. Colleges have a slightly different focus because, it's still prevention education and raising that awareness, recognizes the signs, knowing the signs. But we do take it a little bit further in terms of just the fact that relationships can in fact be dangerous and deadly in that college age group, which again is something that none of us really realized until it was way too late.
We are going to link your site to the notes of this podcast. And I want to make sure before we finish that you can give folks an idea of how they could be helpful to the foundation as well. I thought one of the things in looking back at this that I recall so vividly, living here in Annapolis, Maryland, when I moved out here from California, I couldn't believe how many kids were walking around with lacrosse sticks. I'd never seen anything quite like it in my life. And only living here in this region, do you get a sense of the true family nature of lacrosse in our state and across the region. I suppose every kid in the region knew Yardley if they played any lacrosse at all. And it must have been an incredible gut punch to the lacrosse family, a family that's sort of feels to me upwardly mobile to affluent. You think of it as a safe world that you live in, and then this gut punch happens. It really must have taken it out of you as a coach who's committed to your entire life to the sport and done so many great things. It still resonates with the lacrosse community. I know for a fact. I was just at a match the other day, and I was talking to somebody on the phone about you, and they knew you. Like this is a family, isn't it? This sport.
It is, and that was part of the shock. And I think we had spoken earlier, the fact that domestic violence happens in college was shocking. But to your point, these are two private school kids. They are two privileged kids. They had great families. They had lots of opportunities. They had a lot of friends. So the fact that it can pull in a lacrosse family, a wealthy family, all of that, it is eye-opening. The fact that it happened within lacrosse, if Yardley was murdered by somebody that wasn't in lacrosse, I don't know if it brings the entire lacrosse family in to the same extent that it did. But because it was at the hands of a men's lacrosse player and the victim was a woman, certainly the Virginia lacrosse community has really gotten behind it. Really from day one, they have helped build fields. They have helped with scholarship money. They've helped really get the foundation, helped given us our mission and our direction, and really have helped the funding along the way as well. So one of the things Sharon has always wanted was for all of our education and our materials to be accessible to everyone. She never wanted somebody to say, I couldn't afford to learn about my relationship. I couldn't afford to learn how to recognize the signs and to know the signs. So one of my missions as the CEO is, how do I keep this machine of One Love and this content, how do we keep adding to the content and adding to our team and adding to our reach and still keep it all free? So we do a lot on just the charitable donations, on lots of people that donate a little bit, and then certainly some individuals and some family foundations, corporations, and the NFL and a couple of other pro leagues really getting behind us and helping with some of that corporate sponsorship. But my biggest challenge is, how do we keep this robust? How do we keep it relevant? How do we keep getting this in front of people? How do we keep helping people not only save their lives, but how do we enhance their relationships? And how do I keep it free? Because it's life-changing, and it's so important. And it's so important to Sharon that this helps every community, not just the communities that can afford it. Not just the communities that Yardley came from. No, but how do we get this in with everybody, into all of their schools, into their programming, into the cultures that everybody is creating? You know, have it in their classrooms, in their English classes, in their health and PE classes. Have it as a public speaking content, the something that you could learn about it and speak to. You know, really trying to infuse it into a school is really important. And I think it helps a lot of things, lots of side perks to being able to learn how to love better.
There's a lot of need in education, and I can't think of anything more important than what you're doing, Julie Myers, CEO of One Love. If you would like to donate to One Love, we're going to put contact information in the notes of this show, and encourage you to dig deep and send some money and some support to the One Love family. Julie, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. Have a great rest of your week.
Great. Thanks, Todd. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this conversation, subscribe to our YouTube channel and find us on your favorite podcast platform. On the Clock is part of the Strategos Podcast Network. To view the entire lineup of shows, please visit us at strategosgroup.com. See you next time.